why they don't, they're not able to get a job. I mean, at that time, wasn't able to get a job anywhere that would pay them for their education. So they'd wind up getting a job in as a orderly in a doctor's office, or would build fire and clean the floors, or janitor, what you'd call now, and working maybe grocery stores. The highest that they ever get up there would be bag boys and carry out groceries, something like that. And they just, there's nowhere for them to get a job at, I mean, once they got an education. And I was totally surprised when we came to Mabin, because even the joining state from Tennessee to North Carolina, that there were so many blacks that had, black people that had public jobs, mm-hmm. because we didn't have them around there where I lived at. And they were, whites had a, I would say at one time, probably around maybe the middle 60s, somewhere along there, 60s, maybe early part of 70s, I would say whites was probably a good 50% black.
Did black and white workers get along okay?
Oh, yeah. No problem. I had black people work there, and while I was at Hillbrook, too, I had black people that I worked with down there that was, I consider them just a good friend, a working friend, and mm-hmm. a friend away from job, as white friends I had.
Did they begin working at the Hillsboro plant and the Mabin plant? Was that roughly same amount of black workers in each plant?
I would say so. That I know they had to go through the schools and transfer whites and black, different back and forth to try to make a mixture. But the jobs up here, the public work, that wasn't no problem. There were enough blacks already, black people already on the jobs that that was no problem as far as law was concerned when the segregation come about, mm-hmm. because they were plenty of them already working at public work or anything.
What about, were there any women working at the Hillsboro plant when you got there in 51?
Not except office help.
Except office help, huh?
I don't think there was a woman in the Hillsboro plant. In fact, I don't think there was one in the Mabin plant when I was transferred in 57. And they later, I had a woman that, when we started out, when the work got more than I could do, they hired a woman to sew for me. She cut and helped sew, and I sewed too. But that was probably long in the late 60s or maybe early 70s. Then they started hiring them throughout the plant then, and in different areas. And when they first started out, well, the biggest part of the ones that they hired the women out was they worked in the finishing room where they rubbed the furniture, mm-hmm. and wiped it. They sprayed a glazed stain on it, and they had to have somebody with soft cloths and brushes, big paint brushes, and they brushed it out and evened it up and dried all of the wet finishes off so that it could go through the kiln and dry. Mm-hmm. And that's where the outside of the office, if that was probably the first women to hire. Then they started hiring the men in the cabinet room. Then they skipped around in as, I don't know why they didn't trust them on the job or whatever, in the machine room, because about everything was machinery operated. But later on, well, they had women, when Hickory had it, by the time that they sold out, they had women working all over the place, and it didn't make any difference what kind of job it was.
Do you remember how people responded when they started hiring women in the plant, how the men responded?
I don't remember of any kickback, I mean, from the men folks on it at all. Now, some of them might have thought it was a little strange, just like when a year or two ago when that girl joined that football team, you remember, everybody looked at her funny, like, what are you doing in a whole bunch of men? Uh-huh. And they were probably some of the men that had a feeling like that, but I mean, I don't think it was against a woman, unrespectable. Mm-hmm. It's just, what would you do, one woman with working with it, maybe with a dozen men in a department, one woman and 25 or 30 men in the department, something like that. I think it was more of that kind of attitude. I don't think it was anything against her personally.
But they started hiring both black and white women to work
yeah,
in?
Yeah. The finishing department, where they sprayed the furniture, the glaze on, and had all of these wipers in, I would say they were probably maybe 60 or 70% of black that did that kind of work. They were glad to have a job, and a lot of the women were white women were that tried to find something better, I guess, because I think at that time so many of the black people they'd go through grammar school, and then as soon as they got 16 years old, they could quit. Some of them never even finished grammar. And the ones, the white then, the biggest part of them would go on and get high school education anyway, even if they didn't go to college. And they'd probably go to community college, something like that, and take secretary work or something, and they'd get them a job, office job or something that way. A lot of them worked in the hoser mills. But even that was, for high school education, that was sort of downgrading too.
Was that considered better than working in the furniture?
Well, yeah, most of that was on piecework, and it depended on how fast a worker you was. Some of them made pretty good money. In the hoser, there's a little hoser mill right there, Blue White's. They did dyeing and packing. They'd buy the socks already made, and they'd dye them and pack them and ship them out. So when they'd get them, they'd have the machines would make the sock, but it wouldn't sew in the toe and the heel. They had machines there that would make the toe and the heel in them. So they'd do that, then they'd dye them and pack them in, grade them out and pack them, ship them out to different customers. And some of them, my oldest daughter, she worked at that little mill down there. And I forgot how many 100 pair of socks that you had to make there to make a day's production.
The one near White, that mill?
But it was way up there. She said, I worked there all the summertime. Well, had summertime jobs while she was in school. And she said, I never made production. But man, she worked there. But there was one woman there, she said, she worked so fast with her hands, said you couldn't see her hands move hard. And said she made good money, said she made piecework. But the most places like that, though, back then, a dollar was a dollar. And if you was on piecework, and you made anywhere near the piecework, or especially if you went over it, if there was two or three that in the department that would go over piecework, well, they'd readjust the piecework and make it higher, raise it higher, because they didn't mind paying you piecework, but they didn't want to pay you the extra over. So, and when they did that, the ones under them, that really put a pinch on them, because they had to work like a dickens in order to make a dollar then. Because the hard workers, they more or less, they pushed the wages up. I mean, the price production up.
Were there ever any unions that came in, like Whites, when you were there?
Whites had a union. I believe Mr. Bean told me in 1948, I believe. And it was voted in and stayed in, I think, for about a year, something like that. And they never could collect union dues from it, so they pulled out and left after about a year or something like that. Then in 1955, while I was at Hilbert plant, it came back and tried to get voted in then, and they voted out 2-1. In 1965, 10 years later, they came back and it was voted in about 2-1. So the union, I think, if I ain't mistaken, Ford Motor Company give them about $50,000 or something like that. What they were trying to do was to get the minimum wage pushed up, the pay rate in the South pushed up so that they could afford to buy the cars. So the wages was too low. You'd have to buy a car, you'd have to buy it on 4 or 5 years in order to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was voted in 65, and it went for nearly a year. They had it set for meetings, and since White's was a family-owned thing, you don't tell a man what to do if he got his money in his pocket. That's his.
Mm-hmm.
And that was White's. White's had control and stock of it. And the uncontrolled stock belonged to the milliners, which was also White. They just married a milliner, and but anyway, they controlled it. It wasn't on the stock market, nothing for sale, and it was a family-owned thing. So they brought they had meetings and union meetings up in the building up there next to the hardware store. They had a meeting with a company then, and they'd go in there and they'd sit on the table, and the union would throw the contract out, and White would just pitch it back, and they'd say, "Here's our contract. If you want to stay here, you work by hours. It belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't belong to the people. It's not stock on the stock market for sale or anything. It's ours. If you want to collect off of the men union dues and you want to work with us, why, that for the help of the people, that's okay with us. But you abide by our rules. We don't abide by your rules." And it went up back and forth that way for 6 months, meeting after meeting. And I think it lasted about a year that time.
The union?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that was the same union that came in all three
times?
No,
I'm not sure where it was or not. And the men finally voted out. But the union went to Mr. Bean, since he was the head man. He says, we have so and so and so and so and so. I had a whole list of names that signed union cards to join the union. We want you to deduct such amount union fee from their salary,
mm-hmm.
and pay it to the union. He said, this is a family-owned place of business. You're working for the people, the employees. You also work by our rules. If you want any union dues, see the man and collect them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If the man comes in here and tells me and signs a waiver for me to deduct him his salary, I'll do so. But unless he does, if you get in, you'll take it from him.
Mm-hmm.
So it stayed in. It seemed like about 18 months or something like that from the time it voted in. But they never did get no contract and never did get no union dues. So their money runned out.
There were outside people that came in to organize that?
And a lot of them was. So some of them in the plant that signed up for it. See, they were promised, the first ones that signed up was promised by the union that they would make them union stewards throughout the plant, just like supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reason some of them did. So they got, some of them tried to get a little nasty there about the thing. They said, we'll have a strike and we'll close the gates and we'll get us an iron pipe or a baseball bat and stay out there and somebody can't get in, all this and that and the other. But it never did get to that. They had said, if you come here and do go into work, said we'll beat your car up or something like that. So they just cleaned off the place inside the cyclone fence in the back of the lot there and told us that if they do get that strong, we'll have a security guard on the gate down there to drive your car right on the inside of the plant. It's closed with a 6-foot fence.
Mm-hmm.
It says you can park in there. Your car will not be damaged, and there'll be a guard on the gate. Nobody be going and coming, other than just the regular workers that want to work. So they never did even have a strike. They had a meeting up at the building up there, and I think it's on Wednesday night, And the head man come down here from with his lawyer from New York when they found out that they called it a wildcat strike. It's gonna strike in and do anything they had to do to shut the plant down. They was talking around, they're gonna shut it down, it's gonna make Steve White do this, it's gonna make Steve Miller do that and everything. And I told one of the boys worked for me, and I said, you don't tell them people nothing, how to do nothing. I said, it belongs to them. And I said, before that goes, I said, they've got money. They could close the plant down now and live. I said, they got money. So they had their meeting, and they were going to strike and all. And he said, we got to work in order to put bread on the table, on their tables. And when they got up there and they got the meeting started in process, the head man from New York, the union, he came down with a lawyer with him, and they walked up the front and told him, said, if you pull this strike, it'll be against the rules and regulations. The company, being family-owned, we have no control over them, what to do. If they're willing to work with us, we can work with the men, but other than that, we can't. I said, if you pull a strike, why, it'll be on your own. Said, the company can fire every one of you and hire new labor in the place of you without any problem.
That's what the lawyer told them?
Yeah, and that was the end of the strike. I come back in, one of the first ones signed the paper was worked for me. I didn't know that at the time, but I said, you think Steve White we have to work in order to put bread on Steve White's table? He said, no, sirree. I said, well, what did the man tell you up there last night? He said, he told us that Steve White was worth $17 million. I said, man, with that kind of money, I said, I don't think you'd have to put bread on his table. I think he could afford to buy it himself. And that was the end of the union. They turned around then, and the men themselves did, and turned around and had a vote and voted it out.
Do you remember what the name of the union was?
No, I don't remember what it was. I didn't join it, and I didn't.
Was it something like United Furniture Workers?
Could have been, but I wouldn't say for sure.
But you didn't join, huh?
No, they tried to. I think I'm almost sure they tried it in Kraft Heat, and it didn't get off of the floor. And this little Melville Furniture, they're out of business now. That's built here on the other side of me. Mm-hmm. They were in a rented building in town. And they come in there, and the fellow that owned the place, he just called a meeting and told him, the employees, he said, this Melvin, Charlie Berry, the one that I was talking about, that this friend of mine, mm-hmm. he had left White's at that time and worked for the Melville Furniture. And he said, they come in there and told him, said, we just rent the building, we're here to give you a job and to make money. You vote for the union, you vote a union in, the union be amongst yourself, because we don't own a building or anything, we just pick our machinery up and go somewhere else. Mm. So it never got off the floor there either. So they come down here then about a year or two later and built this new building down here and moved down here. But the Furniture Workers Union, I reckon that's what it was. It just didn't make no hidden way anywhere it went.
Yeah. So if you worked at the company, you, by law, you didn't have to belong to the union if they voted it in. Is that right?
No.
You didn't have to pay dues or.
Mm-mm.
But as long as so many workers voted for the union, then they could have it there.
Well, see, that's what some of them said. I didn't ever say that to that point, but. By it being private owned that way and everything, the ones that really joined the union was just the ones that was willing to join it and hope to get better working conditions and more pay. But there was no promise from that from the company.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of their squawks, the ones that had joined it. If we get the union in, why don't you vote for it? If we get it in and get more money and everything, it'll benefit you as good as it will us. Because if they got the wages raised up 20% or 30% more, or whatever it was, and what it was, why it went for every employee, not mm-hmm. for just a union. And then the union people, then they had to turn around and pay dues. So, I mean, would have if it got off of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have been worse off than the ones that didn't sign, because the one that didn't sign wouldn't have to pay dues.
Yeah, what was your thinking? Yeah. What was your thinking about you didn't join the union?
Well, I just didn't want to join, because I'd seen too much of coming and going of Western Electric down here and different one like that. I had people tell me that worked at Western Electric down there that was where they went on a strike with the union. 5 years later, said they had never caught up with all their bills. They had to take lower rate loans and spread the payments out.
The union?
The workers.
Oh.
Some of them had to borrow money and spread the payments out over several years in order to help catch up some of the other payments they had.
And because they had gone out on strike?
Yeah. Hmm. The union promised to keep them up. Well, they did, I think, furnish some money to buy groceries and pay their main bills, like power bills and water bills. And if you rent a house, help you pay your house rent, things that way. But there's so many of them, though, that had other bills and things like that, new automobiles and things that way, that they had to borrow money in order to loans paid off and pay the banks back, because couldn't do it. But I had some of them it took them years to, after they went back to work, to ever get straightened back out.
Mm-hmm. At White's, did people who were in the union and people who weren't in the union, did that like cause conflicts? Or
it did at that time, but after they seen that the union couldn't do them no good, when they turned around and voted out, then why, all of that was forgotten then. I think it was just more or less because if you're for the union, why, they grouped together. If you wasn't, why, you're separate from us.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to join it. But after it's all over and done with, why, there wasn't no difference in the workers then, I don't think.
Hmm. What did the workers, you and some other people who you've heard talk, some of the people you work with, what did people think of Steve White?
I think most of them thought pretty highly of Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you get a man with money, I don't care who it is, why, you're going to have some that. That's how they got money there, is by making it and keeping it, investing it or whatever, in order to keep building money. If you couldn't, if you had a business and you wasn't making the money, it wouldn't be no use staying in business.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if any of them had anything against them, I think that was because of that. You might have had some say, well, the reason we ain't making no more money because they want to keep it for the self or something like that. But up until probably about the time that union was voted in, somewhere along that, might have been a little before, they used to give us a Christmas bonus.
Hmm.
And some of the board paid on a percentage, depend on how much overtime and how much your salary that you made out of pay to start with. The yearly pay was, some of them would draw anywhere from $500 to $1,500 bonus. Christmas
bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And a lot of them would drive. I know the first two pieces of furniture I bought put in my house. See, me and my wife built the house ourselves. Nobody drove a nail in or anything. We dug the foundation. I laid the blocks myself. Started out with Hillsboro, working 4 9-hour week. I'd come home of eating, I'd work until dark. I'd put me up lights and I'd work until 10, 11 o'clock at night. Sometimes I'd get up in the morning and work an hour or two, maybe before I'd catch my ride at 7 o'clock going back to Hillsboro. And we worked like that for about 3 years until we got the house and got the roof on it. Of course, it took us about 12, 14 years to finish it up, but we halfway fixed the upstairs. I mean, it's livable. And we have a kitchen, a living room, and a 1.5 bedroom and a bath and a hall upstairs. And we worked at that like that, and then once we started laying the block, we'd order just a truckload of blocks, save the money and pay for it. I'd lay them blocks, and if I got the blocks laid before we was able to save money and buy another load, I'd get out and dig stumps or something. We cleared the land here. It was all in big trees. And we worked like that together. And then about 2 years while we had it up and had the roof on it, and had it closed in. And all that time, I was working 4 to 9 hours a week at the Hillsboro plant. Then when I moved ahead to Mebbin plant, I went to work 55 hours a week. Hmm. 10 hours a day and 5 hours on Saturday. But I didn't know what work, what anything was, but work. And that, my wife would work in the daytime. She mixed my cement and carried blocks for me, and I'd lay them, and we'd work together that way. You know, just unbelievable. Never even built a doghouse in my life.
Uh-huh.
And just, it's all by the help of the good Lord that I was, from one thing to another, I was just gifted to, and done the work as we went along. And no carpenter, I've never laid a brick or block or anything in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I went over and watched a fellow in my neighbor where I laid block and built a pump house, and I come back and built mine. Went out on Mebbin Oak Road that Charlie buried out there and laid the foundation for him for 2 rooms. We come back then, we dug out and poured the foot for this one and started laying blocks on this.
Hmm.
Everything on the truck is, I don't know anything that I ever tried that I didn't, would never success at.
Uh-huh.
The carpenter work, we never had a nail drove in the house outside of what me and my wife drove.
Hmm.
The plumbing, I went to, in 1955, we went to, got a friend of mine to carry me down to Lowe's in Durham. They didn't have one up this way then. That was the closest. I went in and told the salesman, I said, I want to get some plumbing equipment to go into my house. He said, how much you want? I said, I want to get enough to plumb the house I got. So I built me a 2-story house. So we went out the back and he showed me where it's at. And I said, he'd come out running out there with his little book and everything, writing stuff down. I said, ain't no use to come with that. He said, why? I said, because I don't know what I want. He said, you come out to plumb a 2-story house, you don't know what you want? I said, well, I know what I want, but I don't know the names of the stuff. I said, that book ain't going to do you no good right now. He said, well, how are you going to get it? I said, you just show me where the stuff's at. And I said, you can go on back in the office and wait on somebody else. And when I get, I'll lay out everything that I need. When I get laid out, well, I'll come and get you and come and write it up then. Because you know all the pieces, but I know what pieces I need, but I don't know what the name of all of it is. So he just shook his head and walked off. He went on back in. I got all my steel pipe for my sewage drain and everything for the whole thing, all the way through the house and for the upstairs vent and everything. Laid it out on the ground piece by piece, joints and everything, where my commode set, where my plug-ins, where my sinks would plug in, bathroom sinks and my bathtub and where the kitchen would go in and everything. I just had it all measured out just on the house. I mean, it just a big open behind the building there where they had the mm-hmm. equipment at. So I had plenty of room. Got all my copper pipe and everything from my wires and figured where all my joints was, where I needed elbows would be 1/2 inch or 3/4, and the spigots I'd need to hook it up and the cutoffs and everything. I got the whole thing all laid out, and he come out there and he says, I've sold a whole lot of plumbing, but nothing like this. He went through and loaded it all up, and we loaded it on a truck, and I come home, and I had to go uptown to a plumber and get one coupling for 1/2 inch pipe in order to put my plumbing in.
Huh. That's funny.
But I did all that myself. I went to Hillsboro. I said, I want to find out about a septic tank.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you want to build one? You want to buy one? He said, if you want to build it, I can give you a plan here for the specification plan to go by and build out a center block and fix it. I said, no. I said, it's a friend of mine, Church. He said that he would drop me off a septic tank at wholesale price next time he orders. He puts in septic tanks. So that's Buck Bradley down the road down here, and he'd go around digging ditches that way for septic tanks, and I think King Brick and Pipe Company out that Broughton, I think they could haul about four on a truck or something like that, and crossways, and had a lift on there where they could pick them up and let them down there. So he told me to just go ahead and get my hole dug and work on that. He said, next time I order a load, I'll just have your foot on the back and then stop at your place and drop it and then come on down then. And so he told me then what I'd have to have for drain pipe, the fellow down there at Hillbird did. He said, of course, when you get it in, you have to have a gravel bottom and all. And when you get it in, covered up, piece of tar paper over all the joints so that dirt can't wash in your, your drain pipe joints. So you get it in, get your joints all covered up with pipe before you put in dirt on it. Said, give me a call and I'll come up and inspect it. So he come up, checked it out and everything. He said, it's okay. So I covered the whole thing up and I never had anything done. I had a fellow come and wire the big part of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And after that then I just got permission and wired the upstairs myself. And these two rooms I built on here, I wired them myself. And then I got a farm over on Lebanon Road. It's got a little house on that I fixed up for one of my daughters about 5 or 6 years ago. And I wired it. I was under town in Lebanon here then. They took over this, we're under Lebanon jurisdiction. So if I build anything now, I've got to have a permit from Lebanon, not from Hillsborough, because we're, they got city limit plus a mile or plus 2 mile, I think it is, that they can control. And so when I was fixing that little one over there, I went down there and got a permit to remodel it. It was just a little outbuilding to remodel it and make a house out of it. And I said, I want to wire it. I said, is there any reason I can't wire it myself? He said, no. I said, buy your wire. I said, no, I'll tell you what you got to have. I said, you can go buy your wire and put it in. And only thing about it, we'll have it checked out. And said, I can't tell you what's wrong with it. Said, you have to get a licensed electrician to check it out if there's anything wrong. So I went and bought my stuff and went out there and wired it and everything. And I called a fellow here in town, Paul Young. He come over and said, okay. So I told Duke, come tell your pie, turn your pie. But it's, we wasn't making much money. Even though I was working overtime, I was making more than a whole lot of others were because of the overtime pay. But everything went in the house when we built it was paid for on the spot. Mm-hmm. If we bought lumber, Mebane Lumber Company, it was paid off before the 30 days before the end of the month. There was never any interest paid on anything in the house. And me and my wife built the whole thing.
And you bought some of the white furniture on with the Christmas bonus?
Yeah. The first two things I bought was, I bought me a television. At that time, it wasn't as high as then. I think we got $150 or something like that. That was way back. And then the next one, I bought me an electric stove. That was two of the main things, really. One was for enjoyment, the other was to be able to eat.
did a lot of workers own pieces of white furniture?
I think a lot of them, but some of them didn't seem to care too much about it. They might buy a piece if they had it on special. I mean, like if they discontinued the suit, they'd have an odd and end piece that way. And a lot of them would just buy it and sell it to somebody else just to make a dollar on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I never did buy nothing like that. What I bought was, I bought for myself. Hmm. So my whole dining room, I bought it like that. It was discontinued stuff while I worked at the Hillbrook plant. And one time I bought a table and chair, another time I bought the buffet, and another time I bought the china. And after it got transferred up here then, we had a corner cabinet that came back. It was counted as a cull. Some customer sent it back and we'd replaced it. I bought it, and that was my corner cabinet. So I give all that to my daughter when they moved out.
Did workers get a discount buying furniture because they worked there?
No, if you bought the new furniture, you bought it at the same price the dealer bought it, mm-hmm. but you had to pay sales tax. Well, the dealer didn't, and that was the only thing. But there was a lot of people around had furniture stores that carried white furniture. I mean, they would buy it if you was the public, didn't work there, and it was public, and you could buy it through the furniture store, and a lot of the furniture stores would charge maybe 25% if you paid cash for it. So what they would do, if you wanted a suit and could pay them cash for it, they would order it from White's, and then they'd go pick it up and deliver it straight to your house, and they wouldn't have no paperwork or anything on it for 25% or something like that.
Somebody was telling me about the Hard Luck Fund. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, the Hard Luck Fund was set up. The head machines in the drink machines in the factory, and they were owned and operated by outsiders, so they decided that if the employees were going to spend the money, they might as well put it some use. So the company turned around and they bought the drink machines, candy machines, stuff like that, and they put them in, and they started putting the money in the Hard Luck Fund, but they would took the payments out of the Hard Luck Fund to pay for the machines. So eventually all of the machines actually belonged to the employees, mm-hmm. more or less, because it was paid for out of the Hard Luck Fund. So the Hard Luck Fund, that got up, and it was a good thing, because if you was out sick or anything like that, well, they'd write you, if the insurance at that time was, of course it was a lower rate insurance, it wasn't nothing what it is now. If you was out like a week, where you'd probably draw $20 or something like that way back then when it first started. So the Hard Luck Fund, then they had a committee set up on that, and I don't know, three or four maybe on it, something like that. And they were booked to match the insurance company of what they paid you. So you wind up with $40. Well, back then, that $40 was about a week's pay. I mean, I know when we started here, I had my weld board. The late part of 50, 51. In October, maybe 51. October, November. And I think my paycheck, I remember, I had a $200 from the Army insurance. I still carry it today, and it pays me a dividend back. And that was 51, was the first dividend they paid, and it was $200. So I paid $100 on the lot to my neighbor. I bought it from my neighbor, paid $100 on my lot, and took my other $100 and my week's pay, which was $46 at that time, and paid for having the well board.
I see.
So we even paid for cash for that, and things like that. But my neighbor, he agreed, he wanted to sell a lot, and he agreed that he would wait for 3 months until we could buy the lumber and pay it off at the Mabin Lumber Company, which we did. I think we bought about $350. We just built a little three-room shack right in front of my shop over, just like a three-room trailer. Mm-hmm. We lived in that for 2 years, and we got the roof on this one. And we fixed one room upstairs, and really, we'd come over here and stay like on the weekends and things that way, and then just go over and sleep. Then when we got moved, we tore it down and built a garage out of the lumber that was in it. Oh, we come in here and we went to work on the thing. We started cutting it down, figuring out how to save a dollar here, a dime there, or whatever. Mm-hmm. We cut down pine trees and set them up on cinder blocks and made that our seals. And we bought 2x6s, made a floor joist, went from one to the other, and put my plate on it and fixed it up. It was just a rough floor in it. We didn't have no finished floor, just regular 5.5-inch board floor just nailed in it. Mm-hmm. And just a place to temporary stay, and that was all we wanted to do. Till we get the big part of the house. And I was covering a little chair for a woman in Greenbrier one time, and she was working in Broughton with a friend of ours. And she said she found out me and Erica had built a house herself. And so she told Miss Rachel Seals, the one she worked with, which was a friend of ours, she said, when I pick my chair up, I want to go pick it up myself. Said I want to see James and Erica's house. So she come down, and Erica wasn't here then. We went through the house. She wanted to see it. And she said, you all sure have done a wonderful job on building the house. Said it's a beautiful house. I said, it's not a house. We didn't build a house. I said, we built a home. And she said, well, she said, you know, said, that's the trouble of the world today. She said, there's too many houses, not enough homes. And it's true. I mean, we built it to live in, and that's what we did. I mean, you can't expect any more than that. I mean, a lot of people there, I don't know, they got a nice house or something. Somebody come in, smoke a cigarette or something like that. They grab the ashtray and run and empty it. And we had a friend of ours down there in Tennessee where we lived. Why, her husband would—he smoked cigars. He would aggravate her to death. He wore overalls a lot of times because he worked as a mechanic on refrigerators and freezers, stuff like that. And he just kept his breech leg turned up. He'd buy his pants legs long and turn up. So he just sat there and just reach down and dump his ashes off his cigar in his cuff of his breech leg. I've seen him do that a minute time. It just aggravated her because she was that way. And the company left it. She had company. The company left. She grabbed a dust mop and go through and dust the living room and everything. And she just had to have everything spick and span. And we go down there every Labor Day and see my folks now. And we have to go by there and see her and her husband. And we just love each other the death they do us, and we do them too. And she's. You would even know her now to what she was when we lived in it. She keeps her house clean, but when dishes get dirty and things, she put them in the sink and wash them. She don't come around like she used to and all that. Well, I guess she found out that there was more to life than just spick and span.
Yeah. did Whites have pretty good? You mentioned insurance. Did Whites have pretty good insurance or medical benefits?
We had pretty good insurance at the end. After Hickory bought it, they upgraded a whole lot. They had to raise the premiums, but who would mind paying an extra dollar a week if you got a whole lot better benefits? And we got, before I retired, they had upgraded either two or three different times, and it was up to they pay. One of the fellows, we had a meeting one time on the insurance, and one fellow spoke up and he says, I've been out sick for 6 weeks at an operation. My bills come every month just like they always do. My grocery bill is no littler, smaller, because I'm home and at work I still have to eat and so does my family. And he says, there's none of my bills has dwindled because I'm out of work. And he says, the insurance that what I collect here and out of the hard luck fund is not enough. So what they did was, they changed the insurance companies, I think, or got a new policy anyway, and they raised, I think it's about $1 more a week or something like that. And they raised it to $75. A week if you was out under doctor's order sick. Then they upgraded again, I think, one time, very, very little, I don't know where it even fits cents or not. And they upped it to $100 if you was out sick, which was pretty good, considered the irregular salary of what you made. Because I imagine the average was probably making $200 a week, so if they was out sick, why, they got $100 from the insurance company, and then the hard luck fund would give them some. They wouldn't match the $100, but because that was would have tore it all to pieces. I mean, used it up quicker. But they had the hard luck fund itself. You was talking about it. They had, when Hickory bought out, I think the hard luck fund was probably standing. We had a work amount for a coverage for us. So if they had machines that had to be worked on, anything like that, was set at a few $1,000, maybe three or four, something like that, in there where they could just write a check on if they needed to pay bills with, like that. But they had a certificate, seemed like for about $60,000 worth it had saved.
On this hard luck fund?
In the hard luck fund. But when Hickory bought it, though, why, they upcreased it, and on top of that, then, well, they started using the hard luck fund for more. Sometimes they'd have outings, like Christmas suppers or something like that, where they'd pay for it out of the hard luck fund. They'd say that's for the employees, so they'd pay for it out of the hard luck fund. If you retired at 62, they'd give you, I think it was $200 or something like that, out of the hard luck fund. If you retired at 65, they'd give you $300 out of the hard luck fund. But they finally busted. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to get rid of it because they didn't want to keep it up anymore.
So Hickory White started using it for different purposes?
Like, yeah.
Whites wouldn't use that to throw mm-hmm. a Christmas party at all, huh?
No. That was used strictly for the help of the employee. I mean, as far as I know now, I don't know that any of it was ever used for that, but Hickory did use it. They paid for outings out of it like that. When the Whites had it, they would have on Christmas, we'd time or two, we went down to Red Barn, Hillsboro,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes we'd just rent the high school auditorium over there and have a table set up in it and have a Christmas supper over there and things like that.